Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Good morning, I'm Roland Martin. And today on News One Now, the Pope heads to the United States. He's here in the nation's capital for his visit to America. He was greeted by President Barack Obama as a show of respect by greeting him at Andrews Air Force Base. We'll break down what Black Catholics think about the Pope's presence and him speaking here in the U.S. Also on today's show, actress Antoinette Smith, Grammy-nominated singer as well. She's part of a tour focusing on hip-hop and climate change. We'll talk to her about that right here on the show. Also, a new book breaks down how racism is still alive and well in our nation's hospitals. Plus, breakout comedy Black-ish premieres for its second season tonight on ABC. And my homeboy, Anthony Anderson, will be here for a preview. It's time to bring the funk on News One Now on TV One. Pope Francis arrived in the United States for the first time yesterday and was greeted by President Barack Obama, Michelle Obama, Vice President Joe Biden, and his wife at Andrews Air Force Base in Maryland. The Argentinian visits the White House today and will celebrate a canonization mass at the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception before addressing a joint session of Congress on Thursday. And so, of course, so many folks are excited. Thousands have been lining up all the streets here. Of course, there's going to be a parade today in the nation's capital. There's going to be a focus tomorrow on climate change. Catholics all across America are certainly excited about the Pope making his first visit to the U.S. and, of course, interested to know what message he is going to bring to American Catholics, but, of course, America at large as well. And so we want to get right into that, especially in terms of where Black Catholics stand. Joining us via Skype from Milwaukee is Father Brian Massengill, professor of theological ethics at Marquette University here in D.C., Deacon Al Douglas Turner from the Office of Black Catholics of the Archdiocese of Washington, D.C., Monique Presley, legal analyst and attorney of the Presley Firm, and Dr. Wilmer Leon, he, of course, with Sirius XM Radio. Dr. Massengill, I want to go to you first because tell folks who are not Catholic, really, what does it mean? What's the significance of Pope Francis coming to the United States? You see all the hoopla. You see all the national media focus on this. You see people literally flying from across the country just to be able to lay their eyes on Pope Francis.
Okay. I think that Pope Francis is unique among the modern popes in that he's captured the imagination of the world. He's a world leader, and I think the key to his popularity is that he's a man who not only has a prophetic message of concern for the poor, the marginalized, the, you know, Matthew 25, reaching out to those who are hungry and homeless, but he's also a person who seems to embody these things. He's a pastor who speaks directly with a pastor's heart. He speaks in direct language that people can understand. And he also embodies in his own simplicity of life, his own life models the message that he preaches. And so I think for all those reasons, he's captured the imaginations and the hopes of people, both Catholic and non-Catholic.
Deacon Douglas, the Archdiocese of D.C., Catholics in America have been in overdrive. Many folks haven't got much sleep. This is, again, a major, major deal. You look at the security here in D.C., look, we have many heads of state, and the Pope is a head of state, who come to D.C., but nothing along these scales when you talk about security, when you talk about these kind of crowds.
Well, yeah, this is unprecedented. That word's been thrown around quite a bit in the last few days. It is such an opportunity to be in the presence of a real pastor. And the Holy Father is a pastor before he's anything else. Also, we live in very dangerous times. And so I'm not surprised at the great lengths of security that have been surrounding his visit. So that's a good thing. And as Father Massengill said, Pope Francis embodies everything that I've been taught as a deacon and as a believer about what it means to pastor the flock and the whole flock. He sees the whole picture here, that everyone is a child of God, and he treats everyone in that particular way. And I think that is a real role model for all of us to follow.
Leon?
His message is very accessible, and the persona that he presents is one of a very accessible individual, which is why I believe that he is also considered, particularly by conservatives, to be so threatening, because his message of inclusion, his message of empowerment, when he starts talking in Latin America about capitalism being the dung of the devil, mm-hmm. and talking about the impoverished in Latin America to take charge of their own plight and destiny, that resonates in this country as well, to Catholics and to non-Catholics. And that message could be incredibly, incredibly dangerous if it starts to take hold in this country.
Monique?
Well, I think that's the power of this Pope. I agree with Deacon that he is a pastor, so he's recognizing that role as Pope, but the Pope is a head of state, and he is sitting squarely in what it means to be a leader in the free world. He used it in a show of force where Cuba is concerned, and as Dr. Leon is saying, with all of his outspokenness about policy, he's got a power seat, he's utilizing it, he's being criticized for it, but that goes with the job, and you're seeing the people's Pope speak up for the people, and I think that that is of great value, especially in these times.
Yesterday, I talked to DeCarlos Blackman, who is the Supreme Grand Knight of the Knights of Peter Claver, the world's largest black Catholic organization. We had a conversation about the Pope and his visit. DeCarlos, he's going to be at the White House today when 15,000 people will be on the South Lawn to greet Pope Francis. Here's our conversation. As the head of the largest black Catholic organization in the world, well, what does it mean to you for Pope Francis making his first visit to the U.S.?
I think this is tremendous because Pope Francis is clearly a pope that black people can identify with. Pope Francis is someone who comes from us for us.
And when you say that, what does that mean?
That means here is someone who is about bringing about encounter with people, meeting them in whatever stages they are in life. I think it's particularly tremendous if you look at the United States, just looking at the prison system, mm-hmm. you know, there are an inordinate amount of blacks and browns in prisons. And the Holy Father coming over here, he's going to visit penitentiaries.
I talked to Father George Clements, and it was interesting. He said that this is the fourth pope he served under. And he said pretty much the other three popes were three white guys in Rome. Mm-hmm. He said, but this has been the first pope that speaks to his consciousness in terms of the issues that he cares about.
Absolutely. Pope Francis is one who clearly identifies with everyone, and he does appeal to the conscience. He appeals to people's morals to do the right thing. But I think there's the constant reminder, particularly when you look at the ecumenical nature of things, the Holy Father is asking us to remember that everyone is your neighbor, whether they look like you or not.
Now, the Knights of Peter Claver has been around since 1909. Mm-hmm. I'm familiar with it. I mean, I was a member of the Junior Division. My grandmother, my grandfather, my brother as well, family were all members. And one of the things that I think is interesting is that here you have this Pope who really has made it clear that the church has to focus on the needs of the poor and how he also represents himself as a leader of the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are responsible for those who cannot take care of themselves. You know, Christ himself said, if you want to gain the kingdom, you know, sell all you have and follow me. So it's not about our comfort and what have you. Take care of everyone else.
One of the things that also is interesting in terms of how you look at progressives and conservatives, how they view mm-hmm. This Pope as well, the issues that he's talking about. And he has managed to
tick folks off on both sides. And he really is not worried about trying to appease someone. He's really saying that in order for the church to be relevant in the 21st century, it has to recognize that if it doesn't reach out, then it's not doing its job.
I would have to agree with that wholeheartedly. The Holy Father is saying that we have to meet people where they are, in their brokenness. Wherever they are, we have to meet them. So I think the Pope is on it. Now, as far as the more liberal Catholics or the more conservative Catholics in that slant, I think the Holy Father is one that we can truly identify with as being faithful. So that's why the Holy Father doesn't worry about, you know, one particular side of the spectrum or the other. His role is to be faithful, and I think he is. He's faithful to Christ and the teachings of the Church.
So when the Pope comes here to the White House for the official visit, you will be one of the folks there. Any plans for you to actually meet and greet the Pope? Have you already done it before?
I have not, and there are no plans for that to happen on tomorrow. You know, I'm just a simple person, so maybe if he goes out into the crowd, maybe, but other than that, no, there are no plans for that, but there doesn't have to be, you know? I'm one of those people that if I'm called up, I'm called up. Other than that, you know, at the end of our lives, we all bow down to the same one, our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.
Somebody asked this question, though. Somebody said, why do Catholics treat the Pope with such reverence? And why do non-Catholics also have the same sort of respect? How would you answer that?
Well, I think that everyone recognizes that he is an authentic person, a man of God. You know, we have a lot of people that talk a good game, but they don't necessarily practice what they preach. And Pope Francis walks what he is speaking.
If you had an opportunity to meet him, to talk with him, and you got one thing to bring up, what would that be?
One thing to bring up, I think that it would be the unity of everyone within the church and outside the church, that we may all be one. If anything there was for me to bring up, that's the goal.
One of the concerns, obviously, for the Catholic Church has been...
I'm good. Folks, you can see the rest of the interview on news1.com. Professor, Father Massengill, I want to go to you. One of the other issues that we are also dealing with is the fact that the Catholic Church is dealing with a lot of erosion of members. There have been a significant number of African Americans who have left the Catholic Church. That's also his task, to speak a relevant message to people today, so they're not leaving the church.
Absolutely. One of the most pressing challenges that you said is this erosion of members and erosion of Black Catholic members in particular. And I think that this is where the Pope can make a great contribution. I think what he has to do is to challenge the Catholic Church in the United States to look at its unfinished task of engaging racism and racial justice in the United States. I think if many Black Catholics who leave, they leave for one of two reasons. One is that they feel their faith needs aren't being met, but more importantly, because they feel a culture of exclusion or inhospitality to them and to their concerns. And so I think one of the things that the Pope can do is to put the issue of social justice and racial justice squarely in front and center in terms of the Catholic Church's concerns. I think that would do a great deal to enhance the credibility of the Catholic Church in the Black community, and especially among its Black Catholic members.
Leon, you are a Catholic. Monique, you've left the church. I left the church two decades ago. And of course, Deacon, you are still in the church. I mean, and again, this is real. I mean, I left the church because I simply felt, I'm sitting there listening to homilies that I felt had absolutely no connection to my life, wasn't saying anything, and I was just sort of repeating the Apostles' Creed and stuff because we sort of gotten used to it. I mean, this is a reality this Pope must confront when it comes to the Catholic Church moving forward.
It has been a real struggle for me. I was, as a child, sentenced to do 12 years in Catholic school, and I did all 12. There was no probation or parole. And the hypocrisy between what we were taught every day in school and what I experienced at the hands of not only those primarily Irish priests and nuns, but even many of my classmates, was reprehensible. And it has proven it up until this day to be a struggle for me to reconcile what the teachings are versus my reality, and hopefully this Pope can bring some of that to the forefront.
Monique, now.
I think you find the hypocrisy everywhere, whether you're in a Catholic church, whether you're in the Protestant faith. My decision to do something different was a personal one, but I've found as I grow further in my faith that the roots that I got in the Catholic church have continued to bless me. My parents are here right now to go and celebrate at the Immaculate Conception. My godfather was a Catholic priest, so I have a great appreciation for this Pope and for the church, and I think that we, you know, church is declining on the whole membership. We've got to do something about that across the board.
Al.
Right. The thing is that both Father Massengale and DeCarlos alluded to it. This Pope, I think, gives us hope as an oppressed people because he walks the walk as well as talks the talk. And he, again, is doing all of the things that we say we believe in. And again, that's going against the grain. But whenever people say, well, you know, that's something new, it isn't new. Just look at a crucifix.
Right.
Jesus was a counter-revolutionary.
Right.
All right, then. Father Massengale, I appreciate you joining us on News One Now. Thank you so very much. And we might chat with you later during the Pope's visit here in the United States. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Panel, hold tight. When we come back, we're going to have the highlights from the Voting Rights Panel at the ISU's Congressional Black Caucus Annual Legislative Conference. Plus, Anthony Smith is here talking climate change and hip-hop on the show, as well as Anthony Anderson talking a new season of Blackish. 16 after the hour. News One Now on TV One.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
A national investigation is underway in Melbourne, Florida, where the FBI says continuous vandalism is taking place at two local churches. Over the past few months, the Central Baptist Church, which displayed a Black Lives Matter sign, and the new Shiloh Christian Center were targeted. The properties were spray painted with swastikas and other graffiti. A $5,000 reward is being offered for any information that will lead to an arrest. The Whitney, Texas man who falsely accused members of the Black Lives Matter movement of vandalizing his truck because of a Police Lives Matter sticker is now under arrest. 45-year-old Scott Latton, a disabled veteran, made the story up after he trashed his own vehicle. A thorough investigation by local police discovered discrepancies in his account. Various gifts of money were sent to him because of the alleged crime. The DA's office is working to refund the donations. Former tennis star James Blake met with the mayor and police commissioner of New York to discuss his recent arrest.
Just had a very productive meeting with Mayor de Blasio, Commissioner Bratton, and to give a general idea, a bit of the general theme was accountability, making sure we focused on that with the police officers in general, and I feel like we've made a lot of progress, and we're all pleasantly surprised. I feel like the whole team, both sides of the table, were on the same page, looking to move forward, and you know, turning a negative incident into a positive, and I think Mayor de Blasio said it extremely extremely well with talking about lasting impact. Not just we're not looking for a quick lawsuit. We're not looking for anything that's gonna be a quick and easy solution. We're looking for a lasting positive impact on the city and on the police force.
It was a few weeks ago during the U.S. Open when Blake was waiting for his car outside of a New York City hotel when he was tackled and arrested by an officer in plain clothes who mistook Blake as an identity theft suspect. The officer, James Frascatore, has a history of excessive force complaints. For several Georgia prisoners, life will be a little brighter with a new prison education system. 70% of Georgia's inmates don't have a high school diploma. So, the Burris Correctional Institute of Middle Georgia opened its first prison-based charter school. Governor Nathan Deal and state lawmakers set aside more than $12 million this year to hire instructors to jumpstart the program. So far, there have been 250 educators, administrators, and other staffers hired to teach the prisoners. Around 100 inmates have signed up for charter school courses. State officials hope that this program will help bring down the state's criminal relapse rate. Substantial new funding will likely be needed to expand throughout the state. A selfie of a Black driver and a white police officer with the hashtag respect has gone viral. The driver, Greg Barnes Jr., was on his way home when he was pulled over by an officer for speeding. He took his story to social media. Quote, I was pulled over for speeding. The officer did not know me, nor did I know him, but we did show each other a mutual display of respect in our interaction. Neither of us are the enemy. We can continue to fight each other until we are literally black and blue, or we can show each other the respect we inherently deserve, not as black man or blue officer, but as humans. Actor Sean Penn has filed a $10 million lawsuit against Empire co-creator Lee Daniels for defamation of character. During a recent interview with The Hollywood Reporter, Lee Daniels addressed Empire star Terrence Howard's past domestic abuse issues by saying, quote, Terrence ain't done nothing different than Marlon Brando or Sean Penn, and all of a sudden he's an effing demon. That's a sign of the time, of race, of where we are right now in America. Penn's attorney Matthew Rosengart released a statement saying, quote, because of Daniel's defamatory statements, Penn brings this action for monetary relief and to deter Daniels and others from their defamatory actions. Penn's complaint also includes the fact that he, unlike Howard, has never been arrested, much less convicted, for domestic violence. Folks, today we mourn the death of one of America's great classic chefs, New Orleans restaurateur Willie Mae Seton, passed away over the weekend. Seton was the owner and founder of Willie Mae's Scotch House Restaurant, the neighborhood family spot that's been in business since 1957. The restaurant was hit hard by Hurricane Katrina in 2005, but she rebuilt and continued to serve her famous homestyle cooking to all who walked through her doors, including President Barack Obama.
I want to thank each and every one of you all what made it possible for me to win this award. I'm so full, I can't say nothing.
And of course, that particular award there is on to one of the country's top chefs. And certainly her remarkable legacy will live on. Folks, spelling must not matter to a Confederate group in Virginia who decided to stage a counter protest to a Black Lives Matter rally over the weekend. This is the banner that the Virginia flaggers flew across the sky in an effort to stop Black Lives Matter activists from getting the Confederate monuments renamed. It says, Confederate Heroes Matter. H-E-R-O-S, when it's actually H-E-R-O-E-S. I'm sure Vice President Dan Quayle will be very proud. Coming up, we'll talk to the author of the new book, Black Man in a White Coat, A Doctor's Reflections on Race and Medicine. Plus, Grammy-nominated singer Antonique Smith is here talking about climate change and hip-hoppers. Plus, my homie Anthony Anderson is talking Blackish. It premieres tonight on ABC. Folks, we'll be back in a moment right here on News One Now on TV One.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Yesterday was National Voter Registration Day, and many folks across the country marked that, including President Barack Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama. President Obama sent this tweet out. He said, first of all, that's the First Lady's tweet. It's so important to cast your vote and make your voice heard. Get started today. Vote.usa.gov. And anytime you see MO, that means she actually tweeted that versus a staffer. And also the president, he sent out a tweet from his Twitter account, which is POTUS. Our right to vote is sacred. It is the foundation of our democracy. You can find out how to register to vote at vote.usa.gov. That was also the focus of several panels at Congressional Black Caucus Foundation Conference over the weekend. And many of the folks who were there speaking included Congressman John Lewis, but also Alicia Garza, one of the co-founders of the Black Lives Matter hashtag. And so we want to hear from both of them. So let's talk here from Congressman Lewis talking about the power of the vote.
The vote is precious. Mm-hmm. It's almost sacred. Mm-hmm. It is the most powerful nonviolent instrument or tool that we have in a democratic society. And we have to use it. Why do people want to keep us from having it? Mm-hmm. There must be something about it. Mm-hmm. Why are people trying to take it from us? There must be something false about it. So in America, at this moment in our history, there's a lot of fear, and people preaching fear. If they don't want to see people come together, because they know if we come together, I tell you, and if Texas and a few other places in the South get it right, I tell you, we'll be on a path where people will never go back.
and we will have a different America and a better America and a better world.
I think there's a culture that is very disillusioned with voting. When I read the ballot, I realize I have a college degree, working on a master's, and half the stuff I see on my ballot I don't understand. And so if that's true for me, who else is that true for?
Folks, of course, we got a presidential election coming up. We got local elections. And because of that Supreme Court decision a couple of years ago, I don't think people really realize the impact it may very well have on turnout in local, state, national elections.
What people need to appreciate is that this whole thing about voter fraud is fraud. And more responsible organizations need to get that message out. Doesn't exist in this country.
Right, and voting affects every issue across the board. There's no point in marching in a Black Lives Matter movement if you're not going to get people out to vote, because the votes affect police departments, they affect councils, they affect mayors and DAs. So it matters on every level.
It also affects the fact that if you want to serve on a jury because you want to say somebody got off, well, guess what? That's where they pull potential jurors from. That is the voting rolls. So if you're not registered, guess what? You'll never get to serve on the jury. Deacon? Right.
And if you don't vote, then you get the kind of government that you deserve.
That's right.
And
that is right.
And I always say, voters, shut the hell up. All right. Folks, also I chatted with a doctor about this whole issue of being Black and being a doctor. Actually, it's pretty interesting. And he wrote a book, of course, Damon Tweedy. And he really laid out that, you know what, we don't really live in a post-racial America, especially when it comes to your doctor.
And there's a long history. If you think about 50 years ago, hospitals were segregated. I mean, all sorts of really horrible things were taking place. The Tuskegee experiment was going on. And so people remember these things, right? I mean, people want to pretend that this is ancient history, but this is still real history. And it affects the way that, you know, patients, Black patients, when they go to the hospital, what's going to happen to me? And so that's a real issue that I see and dealt with all the time.
How did you feel to have someone question your aptitude to actually complete medical school? I mean, so what happened there?
Yeah, well, there are actually several times things like that have happened, but there are two that I talk about in the book in particular. So there was one was my first year in medical school. I'm walking into a classroom about a month into the year. I'm already a little bit, you know, uneasy. Everyone who goes to medical school is a little bit uneasy, but I'm a Black person. I'm coming from a working class background, and I'm here at this privileged sort of white school. And, you know, how am I going to fit
what
in?
What school?
It was a Duke.
You're at Duke.
Yeah.
So how many other African Americans are in medical school there with you?
Well, we were actually the first class where there were actually larger numbers. So it was in previous years, there had been maybe 5 or 6 out of a class of 100. And we were a class, we had about 12. So it was a big change. It was like,
five or six and 12, huge number.
Well, yeah.
I understand.
But it was like the change from the past to the present. And so some folks were there were like really not sure what to make of that. You know, some of the professors, they were used to things being a certain way. And now there's this sort of, intention to increase the numbers, right? And so when I walk into the classroom this first day, professor comes up to me and he's sort of an angry sort of way. He says, are you here to fix the lights in the room? And and he was angry about it because he said, I'd called about this the week before and why haven't you done this? So it was this really, just really terrible.
Now, you got books in hand,
students,
you're dressed like your brother's student.
That's the thing. At first, I looked at myself like, man, did I do something wrong? Like, did I shave? Did I present myself the right way? You know, I was looking like, what did I do wrong, right? And so, no, I was just like everyone else, but other than one obvious, thing that I wasn't like everyone else. And so, yeah, that was my sort of, one of my introductions to.
Okay, so what happened when you said, nah, player, you got the wrong dude?
Yeah, he just was kind of like, oh, and just went away, and he walked away like nothing
happened.
Yeah,
your bedside manner was a whole lot different from mine.
And but I write in the book about that. I'm like, man, it's a part of me that wanted to just like, say, look, this is, you got it all wrong, Buster, and wanted to really come out at him. But then there's this other part of me is like, man, I'm here, I gotta figure out how to make this work. I'm the first person in my family to go to medical school. I can't blow this opportunity, right? And so it was sort of this struggle.
You still could have cussed him out. Like, I got you.
But now,
it's interesting when you talk about white patients wanting a white doctor. We saw the story out of Virginia, Danville, Virginia, where a brother working at, I think it was Lowe's, and a white woman calls up and says, look, don't send somebody Black out here delivering packages to me.
Mm, wow.
And they took him off the route. So how does it make you feel? Like, wait a minute, I went to medical school. I'm a doctor. I might be better than this cat over here. Right. And because I'm black, I can't be your doctor?
Well, that actually happened in the book. So there's a story in the book where I talk about that. This point now, I'm a brand new doctor, first year out of medical school. I'm in the hospital. I'm actually the only black doctor, and this is not uncommon. I was the only black doctor in the hospital. And this patient comes in there, and he uses racist slurs, he uses the N-word to say that, you know, he doesn't want a black doctor taking care of him. So that was, again, I'm like, I'm just making this transition to being a young doctor, and I'm getting hit with this. And so it was like, dang, you know. And so, again, my reaction, like, what do I do, right?
And
so,
and he was coming in for what?
He was an old guy. He was sick. He had pneumonia, chest pain. So he was, you know, he's an old guy. He needed to be treated.
So how did you respond to him?
First, I was just shocked, right? And so the people above me were like, you know, you don't have to deal with this. We're gonna, we'll take care of it. But then there was a part of me that felt like, I need to take care of this myself. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't just, you know, this has got to, we can't deal with this. But then, this is what happened. So the next day, his family comes in, and the family is basically, they're all clothed in a Confederate flag attire, tattoos, Confederate flag tattoos. I'm thinking, man, this is really not going to work, right? And so the book talks about just how that all goes down. It goes down. I mean, actually, you know, it's a kind of a surprise ending. I mean, I don't want to give it all away.
Right,
now,
I gotcha.
But it's a surprise ending. But yeah, I mean, but that was just one example of like kind of what I faced, you know, during that time. And there are many others I talk about in the book.
Oh, what would you say? Because the reality is, you still have folks today who have to confront this.
Sure.
And so, what do you say to that young person who is looking to go to medical school? Who's grown up in this world that, oh no, it's all wonderful and we all get along, that you still might have to face that kind of racial animosity here in 2015.
Well, one of the things I talk about in the book is that when I first started medical school, I kind of had that post-racial mindset. You know, I thought medicine was going to be just objective. I was attracted to like equations and formulas and, you know, get away from all the messiness of life. But when I got to medical school, I learned pretty quickly that race was a big deal, not only for how people perceived me, but how patients were being, you know, treated and how they were going through the healthcare system. So it was a big deal. So far I've been going around and I've been giving some talks to people, and I've talked to a lot of young medical students, and, you know, and it's amazing how much my experiences are similar to other people's experiences. So what I tell people is that, you know, these issues, people are going to doubt you, and you got to really, you know, you got to press forward, and you can't back down. And sometimes you got to pick your battle. Sometimes you got to put people on notice and let them know that you do belong, you know?
Folks, the book is called Black Man in a White Coat, A Doctor's Reflections on Race in Medicine by Dr. Damon Tweedy. I certainly appreciate it, man. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks, man.
All right, appreciate it.
Thank you.
Back on News 1 Now on TV 1, just a moment.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Climate change is a major issue that Pope Francis has been talking about all over the world. It is one he is likely to address when he speaks before Congress and also at the White House. It is also an issue that folks in the hip hop community are concerned with. Antonique Smith has been working with the Hip Hop Caucus on this very issue, traveling around the country, raising the roof when it comes to the issue of climate change. And she joins us right now on News One Now. How you doing?
Hi.
All right, then. We're certainly glad to have you here. And Aww. So folks know you from your music. But why this issue? What is it about this issue that you said, I want to get involved? You were here at Black Caucus last week. Y'all been traveling on a bus all across the country. There's going to be a big rally on Thursday.
Yeah.
Why this issue?
Because I'm from East Orange, New Jersey. I grew up about 10 miles from a power plant. There's a notorious smell on the turnpike in New Jersey, not too far from the Newark Airport. And I'm about 10 miles from that. Last year, I found my bro, Malik Youssef, got me involved with the Hip Hop Caucus. They were doing an album called The Home, Heal on Mother Earth, home album. And I did not realize that climate change and this whole movement was more about what's going on here and now in the urban and black communities and how we're dying from the pollution from the power plants. I'm thinking, you know, ice glaciers, polar bears, future, world's gonna end.
Basically, you're thinking that stuff way over there.
Yeah.
Nothing
not
right
really
here.
Affecting us, but I'm finding that there's a correlation between the Black Lives Matter movement, because they are killing us in the street, but there's some corporations who care a lot more about profits than they do about us as people, and the pollution from these power plants is causing cancer, it's causing asthma. One in six black kids have asthma. it's like an epidemic. And I mean, I know a lot of people have asthma, and it's almost like a normal thing. Oh, mm-hmm. you know, I have asthma. And cancer is hereditary. But nobody's telling the truth that it's actually being caused by the pollution in our air and in our water.
And we had a previous group on before, and I said to them, I said, absolutely, when you think of these environmental issues, frankly, you're thinking largely of a bunch of white folks out in the streets protesting, and right. a lot of African Americans. I mean, I've heard black folks say, look, man, that's a white folks thing. Right. That ain't got nothing to do with us.
We don't know. We don't know that there's a war being waged, we're under attack, and we don't even realize it.
So what is it that we can do to get the word to more people of color to let them know, hey, when you're hearing these conservatives who are blocking climate change, they're really saying this affects the corporate dollar. How can we get our people to be concerned about these
issues?
You
know what? There's a lot of websites. There's the hiphopcaucus.org. There's the peoplesclimatemusic.com. Everybody just needs to do a little research. It's not about, you know, when nobody's asking for people to send money, you know, because I know that happens a lot. And it's like, oh, in order to get involved, I got to write a check. That's not even what we're saying. We're just saying, inform yourself with the information that of how it's affecting you. People just don't realize that some of their apartment complexes are built on landfills, mm-hmm. that there's literally toxicity underneath the ground, that they're building parks on landfills, that they're trying to build an incinerator. We were in Baltimore yesterday, and they fought against an incinerator being built about 8 blocks from the school, from the high school. And they won that battle. But these are battles that we don't always win, because 68% of African Americans live within 30 miles of a power plant. I live within 10 miles from one in East Orange, New Jersey. So it's just getting the knowledge about it, voting, yeah. finding out who your representative is. A lot of times we don't even know what the stance is for some of the people that we voted for on these issues. So it's about finding out, you know, who's speaking for you and making sure that they're on your agenda.
Deacon Douglas Turner, this thing is so powerful. I mean, you have folks who literally have said Pope Francis should shut up. I mean, I've heard some Fox News commentators say, like Brian Kilmeade,
crazy.
He doesn't even need to come to America. I mean, it is as if they're so angry that here you have a major religious figure who has been so aggressive on climate change, literally shut up, be quiet. This is gonna negatively affect business. They're telling the Pope to shut up.
And
crazy.
They're absolutely wrong, because, again, the Pope is doing what we're supposed to be stewards of this planet.
Yep, right.
We're supposed to take care of it. Yes, we exploit its goods and all that, but not to the point where we start poisoning our own house. Yep. This is the only house we have. And if we can't go anywhere yet, so we've got to take care of it. And it's irresponsible if you have the bully pulpit to not say something.
It also shows how divisive these politics are, because you have supposedly devout Catholics like Rick Santorum, mm-hmm. who are saying, ignore the Pope, mm-hmm. that he should stick to issues other than science, even though he studied chemistry.
Listen to him on abortion, but ignore him on climate change.
Right. Ignore him on climate change. And that shows you how dangerous these single issue politics and these identity politics truly are, when supposedly devout Catholics will oppose the head of the Catholic Church on an issue like climate change, which means I don't know what Bible Rick Santorum is reading, because it states very clearly, right. to your point, we're supposed to be stewards of the earth.
Yeah. Tell us about what's happening on Thursday.
Thursday, the Pope is having a rally. The Pope is going to speak before Congress, and I guess we've heard that some people aren't going to show up. But he's going to make this extremely important address to Congress about climate justice, because it's really a civil rights issue. You know, clean water, clean air, that's like a basic necessity. And if we don't have it, none of us will actually be on this earth at some point, which I think is kind of weird that people would care that much about money over existence. But so that's what's happening on Thursday. I'm performing. There's going to be a big rally on the National Mall at 7 a.m. I'm singing a couple songs. We're also doing Love Song to the Earth. Moby, Natasha Bedingfield, is going to be a lot of us out there, and it's going to be amazing. And I'm praying that this is that moment that is going to make that change that Congress and the government will see the clean power plan that Obama is trying to pass. We got to get that to pass. So that's really stuff people can do to just speak out and say, we need to pass that bill. Get, you know, call your representatives and tell them when it's time to vote on the clean power plan, because that is going to help reduce the carbon emissions from the power plants, because they're the biggest polluters. Like cars, yeah, we need cars, we need gas and oil, we need all of that stuff to run our lives, but we don't need these power plants just completely polluting our air.
Where can folks get more information?
PeoplesClimateMusic.com and HipHopCaucus.org. Oh, and followfrancis.org, the Pope's website.
Okay, yeah. All right. Antique, we truly appreciate it. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you.
Folks, when we come back, we'll check with Anthony Anderson. He talks the new season of Black-ish show premieres tonight on ABC. So, you know, this is about to be an ignorant conversation when Anthony come on the show. For more news and information, go to News1.com. And, of course, you can hit me on Twitter at Roland S. Martin or at News1, or go to our News1 Facebook page. It is 13 before top of the hour. News1 Now, TV1.
I'm Tasha Cobbs, and you are watching Roland Martin on TV One.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Yo, birthday shout-out time. San Diego Padres outfielder Matt Kemp turns 31. The Dodgers of the shoe wish they... Okay, y'all, seriously, he's now with the Padres. Can we not show him in the Dodgers cap? I'm just saying, he got traded. I'm just saying, small little detail, I'm just saying. All right, actor Anthony Mackie, he turns 37. Songwriter and producer Jermaine Dupri turns 43. And my homegirl, Lisa Ray McCoy, she turns 48 on this day in history, 1884. J.W. Reed patents the dough kneader and roller. Anthony Anderson appreciates him for that invention. 1961, President Kennedy nominates Thurgood Marshall to the U.S. Court of Appeals. In 1998, Nelson Mandela receives the Congressional Gold Medal. Mm-hmm. All right, folks, tonight is the premiere, season two premiere of the ABC breakout comedy Black-ish. Of course, it details the funny antics of the Johnson family, and it kept us tuning in week after week. A big hit for ABC. Here's a sneak peek at season two.
Okay, for the record, let's get a few things straight.
Dad, it's not...
Quiet! Please, the N-word is not for everybody. You cannot say it. You definitely can't say it. Hell, you bet not even think it. And you. I'm gonna need to meet your mom and daddy.
Well, the crazy man himself joins us via Skype from New York. Wake up!
Look here, man. When you invite me to your show live in studio, you better have your ass live in studio with me.
I am live, but I'm in D.C. You're in New York.
Hey, the deacon don't play golf with you. I do.
see how you do it, brother. I'm sitting here trying to show you some love, new season, talk about the show, and you got attitude this early.
Yes, I'm live in studio with some short dude named Dave, Mike. I don't know who the hell he is, and I got this feedback that I can't even do an interview with you because I can't hear myself.
All right, tell
me. I can't even see you. This is some Negro production up here at TV One. There isn't even a monitor for me to watch you live.
Well, Anthony, let me also remind you, there were numerous times when I did interviews when I was in studio. I was off-site at CNN where it was simply a camera and there was no monitor as well. Also, Fox News and NBC. So don't simply limit this to Black Cable Networks, you ingrate.
I'm limiting it to Black Cable Network because I'm dealing with Black Cable Network right now. I love my Black Cable Network, I might add. I'm just saying, I cannot see you.
Okay.
And I love your pretty fat face.
and I love your tinted beard, because you know you got some gray up in there. All right, tell us about...
I let the gray show through, brother. I'm not ashamed.
Well, about time. Tell us about season two of Black-ish. Of course, premieres tonight, ABC, 9:30 p.m. Eastern on the Non-Black Network.
Well, it's definitely not 9:30 a.m. Eastern. That's Good Morning America time and Roland Martin time. But the show is premiering tonight. As you see, we're dealing with the N-word. You know, we're coming out with both barrels of the gun blazing this season. You know, we pride ourselves on dealing with divisive topics within, you know, not only our community, but the community at large, that just creates conversation. So two people can come to the table with opposing views and sit there and hopefully leave the table having a better understanding of what that other person had to say. And we deal with it in a comedic and an entertaining way. That's what we're going to do all season long.
Now, I got some other folks here in the studio. We got Antonique Smith, the singer, who's here. We got Deacon Douglas, Al Douglas Turner from the Office of Black Catholics. He said he's going to ask the Pope for a specific prayer for you and the show.
But you know what? Just pray for me, Deacon. The show is fine. Just pray for me. And in praying for me, the show will be all right. Oh, I do need prayer and a laying of hands on occasion.
Oh, yeah, because when I see you, I'm going to lay hands on you. I'm going to lay hands on you when I see you.
Do they lay hands in the Catholic Church, or is that just something I grew up with in the Baptist Church?
Where do you think the Baptist Church got it from?
I have no idea because I'm a heathen.
I'm done asking questions of Anthony. Any of y'all got a question for him?
I do.
Leon, go ahead.
So much of our comedy comes out of our pain. And you all on the show, attack that and address that. Talk a bit about where you find the line and how, particularly on a network like ABC, where do you find the line? Or do you have a line?
We don't have a line. And if we did have a line, we would definitely cross it and draw outside of it. And ABC supports that. Yeah. Paul Lee and Ben Sherwood at the studio and the network, respectively, have given us complete autonomy over our show and support us. They actually went and fought standards and practices for us to say the N-word on our show and not just bleep it out. So that's how much they believe in us. And if there was a line ever there, we've never seen it.
Monique, Antonique?
Well, I'm wondering if you can tell us anything else. Can we get some spoiler alerts about other things that are coming up this season?
What other topics you're going to address?
First, the N-word. The N-word. Next week, we're dealing with my character, Andre, buying a handgun. For his protection and to protect the family, and everyone has a point of view about that. Our third episode is going to deal about men's health, in particular black men's health, and how we in the community seldom go to the hospital because we don't want to know what we got.
That's right.
So those are our first three episodes that we have in the chamber locked and loaded.
All right then. Well, again, season two of Blackish premieres tonight on ABC at 9:30.
Is this interview over? I woke my behind up at 6 a.m. to get to an empty studio where I cannot see you or your guest panel while you're in D.C.? Why am I screaming?
I don't understand why you're screaming. And so, all right,
I can't see you, so I don't know if you can hear me or not. That's why I'm screaming.
Without the
I don't know. I ain't got nothing but a little cannon camera in front of me and the midget man who's standing here manning the camera. Yeah. He's on his tippy toes on a stepladder, and the camera's only 4'10" off the ground. You should see this dude. You know this dude, Roland.
I do. I know that guy. I know that guy, so why don't you...
I should hope you know Lil Man Tate. He got the keys to the building.
Okay, well, here's the deal. Since if you want to see me then, why don't you just pull your little iPhone out and just FaceTime me?
Oh, good idea.
I no longer have an iPhone.
Yeah,
I know. S6 Galaxy.
Yeah, I just tried it. I said, Anthony Anderson is not available. All right, then. Well, fine, then. Go on with your little Android. I got to go. Well, you know, and we'll Periscope later or something like that since you want to see your brother. All right, man.
That's funny.
I love you, Roland. Thanks for having me, brother, as always.
Love you as well, brother. I look forward to taking your money on the golf course. Folks, News One Now.
Oh, that's blasphemy.
News One Now, TV One. Be right back.
Slap him across the face with your hand.
Hey, I'm Deion Cole from Black-ish, and you're watching News One Now with Roland Martin on TV One.
All right, last.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.
All right, folks, Antonique, she got some stuff she want to talk about. What you got? You got a new song?
Yeah, it's a new song called Higher. It's about people who, you know, if you don't, a little afraid to commit. Most of y'all guys are afraid to commit.
Oh, how the hell are you going to point at us? I mean, you're going to have a deacon cuss you out to
me. Okay, Deacon, don't cuss me out, but y'all know, you will have to admit sometimes guys don't want to commit. But
and sometimes women don't want to commit.
And sometimes they don't. But this is what you said. You said, don't you worry, I'm not trying to change you. I won't chase you. I'm only trying to elevate you higher if you let your guard down.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yes, sound like, on iTunes.
Sound like something a bunch of brothers told some sisters, too. But go ahead.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Don't be trying. All right.
That's hilarious.
You're going to get cut.
I'm just saying.
All right, so the song's called Higher.
The song is called Higher. It's on iTunes.
All right.
And I have a new movie coming out on TV One. In October. I don't have the exact
What's
date,
the name of
unfortunately.
It?
It's called Stock Option. It's a very sweet romantic comedy. Me and Tasha Smith, Eamon Joseph, Aaron Spears, directed by Mark Harris.
Oh, yeah. I stopped by
the set. You stopped by the set.
By the set.
You did.
When y'all was shooting that movie.
Yes, she
That's
did.
Right.
Yep. In Atlanta. Yup, you All sure right, did.
Then. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
It's coming on TV One.
All right, then. So we'll have you back on to talk about that. So, again, get her song Higher. And, again, you're performing on tomorrow at the Climate Change Rally. Again, what time?
On the National Mall at 7 a.m.
Ooh, Lord, that's
I know,
early.
Y'all waking up early.
Oh,
hell,
that's right. We on TV at 7 a.m. So you know what? I'll send somebody over there. Then we'll probably take something live or something like that. So I appreciate it.
Thank you. Mike.
Thanks a bunch. Tomorrow on the show, folks, we'll have more of the Pope's visit. And Luther Campbell talks about his new book right here on News One Now. Holla!
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.